Good day, you are listening to Free City Radio. It is Wednesday, the 20th of April. I'm your host, Stefan Christoph, in Montreal. This is the 106th edition of the program. Today, I'm going to be playing an interview from the archives. We'll be hearing musician, composer, academic Wadada Leo Smith. This was a conversation I recorded 5 years ago on the project that Wadada was working on called 10 Freedom Summers, which explores histories of struggle for emancipation, specifically the legal case launched by Dred Scott for emancipation and against enslavement, while also looking at other paramount moments within the civil rights movement generations later. The work of Wadada Leo Smith ties connections between different struggles within the U.S. of Black communities fighting for emancipation and liberation. This is a project that is ongoing. Wadada Leo Smith has been very active in creating and composing music. A lot of his work is based on visual scores. I had the chance to see him in Montreal at La Sala Rosa about 5 years ago. And it was just amazing to see the compositional practice live through visual scores. And I wanted to play this interview from the archives. It's an excellent one, and I hadn't featured it here on the podcast. So here's my conversation with Wadada Leo Smith.
I'm with Wadada Leo Smith, who's a composer, musician, performed last night at the Sala Rosa with the Golden Quartet, and we're sitting on St. Laurent Street here in Montreal. Good day.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day.
So thanks for speaking with us. I guess to start, I would maybe just like to hear a bit about some of the pieces we heard last night, just as a starting point. 10 Freedom Summers, you visited a lot of both figures central to liberation struggles in the United States for emancipation, also more recent history in terms of New York City, 9/11, really sort of you had this historical map going on and then translated through musicality. Maybe if you could just start by talking a bit about that project and where it's coming from.
Well, the project opens with Dred Scott, 1857, I believe it is, or 53, where it looks at, for me, the central issue was when was the first debate about race in America that happened. And it happened during that time because when Dred Scott was a slave, quote, slave, his master died, and the master kids wanted to inherit him as property. And so some people got with him, and the case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, of course, ruled against him, but he became the most famous, quote, slave of his time. And I started there because issues of rights and privileges and stuff like that, I needed to have a point in which this issue was actually addressed completely by a legal system, which was the United States Supreme Court. And this was done in St. Louis, Missouri. As part of my research, I went to that city and I saw that court, okay? But the ruling was that a black man or person, because he wasn't addressed properly, has no rights in which a white man should respect. That was the ruling. Okay. That Supreme Court justice, I believe that his photograph has been removed from the courts, you see, because that ruling was really pretty horrendous. Okay. So that's kind of the beginning piece, not the first composed piece, but beginning piece in those three collections. I look at major issues like, for example, Brown versus Board of Education, which is a court case that was brought before the Supreme Court that was eventually won. But the winning of that case never fixed or solved any of the problems, because it was a problem of education being separate but equal, as they pretend. It wasn't separate. It was separate but not equal, okay? And so the justice who was a Supreme Court justice, he was formerly the governor of California.
Okay.
I'm forgetting his name right now, but in California, he was the governor that that put the Japanese in concentration camps.
Oh my God.
During the Second World War. So when he became Chief Justice and this issue of race come before him, like the Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, he wanted a unanimous decision because he's trying to save his soul. Okay? Chief Justice Earl Warren, that's his name. Okay? And so what he did, he worked hard behind the scenes to get a unanimous decision on this Brown versus Board of Education.
Okay.
And he got it.
Okay.
But in the meantime, the writing of the ruling distorted the victory. It said that this legal segregation should be erased with deliberate speed.
Okay.
Which meant that that's another way of deferring justice. You don't have justice wiped done by deliberate speed. Justice done immediately, you see. So that meant that even though he had fought to get this case open and a unanimous decision, he also killed it by putting this phrase with deliberate speed. One of the scholars at Harvard, Overtree is his name.
Okay.
He went and investigated this word deliberate speed, and he found that it goes really way back, and it always inferred that it would be a way of actually blocking justice as opposed to opening it up. You see, so we're looking at an issue of a human being who addressed the issue of slavery, and tried at that time in the 1800s to move it from the category of property into the areas of human rights. And what is it? Nearly 100 years later, in 1954, the Supreme Court hears this case about education, which should have been resolved. Even though the case was won, it never resolved the issue. You see, and still today you have this unequal representation of knowledge and information in schools. See, so Ten Freedom Summer looks at these kinds of issues, and 9/11 is like an event. It looks at that aspect too, because 9/11 is, you don't look at it as being a issue of justice and freedom in that context. But I put it into the context for the same reason I put Dred Scott. That showed, at that point, the idea of what I believe humanism is about. That is, those people trying to find and make a decision about life and death, where the decision that they make, both of them leads to death. That is, when they jump from the building, they stay there, they're going to burn up. They jump, they're going to die from crashing on the pavement.
Sure.
So what does that say about the human being? It says something very profound. I can't articulate it, but it tells me that that person really does value the quality of life and the presence of life. That is, the present to make a choice of when they will be taken out. Either there, on the ceiling, or those few seconds before they hit the ground. Okay. And I find that particular issue is one of a tragedy, because what can you do in a situation like that? And what courage it takes to make a choice. That's a deep courage. And to me, that expressed something about the human being. That the human being will always strive to endure and prolong life, even though it's only for a few seconds. Okay? And choice, understanding that that's a choice. Pretty fantastic.
I see, like, this historical arch in your work.
Yes.
The history of struggle in the United States for justice is in the origins of that entire national project, both from the grassroots perspective and then also at the levels of government. Yep. At the highest level, you have this constant conflict.
Right.
Between forces for justice and forces of colonialism, essentially, that whole economic model.
Right.
Rooted,
right,
of course, in slavery, that has really transformed into this global beast today. So I'm wondering, as a jazz musician or as an improviser and a composer specifically, because you passed around your scores today, which were beautiful, I do want to ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems that throughout this historical arch, the United States has also really found a voice. Musicians have told this story in so many ways, both lyrically, but also in notation.
Right.
And it's just really, really awesome and amazing to see this historical arch being projected, because I feel like today in the contemporary context of, like, issues of struggles for justice are addressed, like, even by some artists, it's very focused, like, mm-hmm. in terms of looking at very contemporary event or one specific issue, mm-hmm. but that historical perspective is sort of lost. For you, mm-hmm. as a composer looking at this historical struggle for justice, you know, particularly the Black freedom struggle in the United States, can you talk about that importance of, like, that historical arc to your work?
Well, yes. The historical element is an informing process. I take my cue in the same idiom as August Wilson does. August Wilson wrote what's called the Pig Spirit Cycle, a set of 10 plays, and each of the play covered 100 years.
Okay.
And what he did in this context was he employed culture as the element of expression to look at the historical issue.
Sure,
you
sure.
see. And I take it exactly from him.
Okay.
That's why I use the word 10 Freedom Summer. He took a decade, okay, through each play representing 100 years. I took one decade, which would actually be one day out of each of the decades, which made 10 of them.
Wow.
You see. And my structure is historical.
Okay.
as an informative quality. But the real core of what I'm looking at is a cultural arc with the psychological merge.
Sure.
So a cultural psychological merge by being informed by historical events. Okay.
Yeah.
And I understood his plays that he showcased the evolution of culture, because that's the element in society that cannot be depressed or suppressed. You see, you can suppress the physical body,
sure.
the environment, and et cetera, but culture still thrives.
Yeah.
And it still explodes and still moves on, you see,
yeah.
because culture is something that the creator put inside of people that could never, ever be distorted, you see. Whereas the political and the social and the economic reality can be exploited and distorted, but culture cannot.
Yeah.
And it transcends all of the impact of unpolitical right decisions. It,
yeah.
it transcends all of that.
Wow.
Because even in slavery, we discovered that there were people composing music and making composition. You see, and theater as well, all these things, and dance.
In prisons today.
In prison, exactly.
Yeah.
You see, so culture is that new inquiry that makes it so that provides so much information. Even in American scholastic terrain today, jazz, quote jazz, quote, we use the word creative music, but jazz is the fastest growing scholarly topic in these institutions.
Sure.
And the reason for that is because it's a cultural inquiry that they're looking through to try to solve some of the practical problems of society. Okay. Like, for example, if Congress could model the practice in an ensemble, yeah, anywhere in the world, anybody's Congress or Parliament, yeah, you would have a better, a unique form of justice and a much more creative, yeah, and productive society than we have today, which is modeled off of economics and political shrinking.
Yeah.
So on the in terms of representing a lot of these ideas in music, I mean, from the show last night, and also just looking a bit at your score, you have this mix of compositions that's almost, it's notated, but there's a visual score element, a lot of like references, and there's a mix of improvisation and composition, right, dialogue.
Even with the written parts, the improvisation occurs. And for example, when we did Democracy last night, each person had one segment that they used, not the full score, just one segment.
Okay.
And Anthony Davis, I used him as the horizontal marker. He had two sections.
Okay.
That slow section that he would play,
that was
the center of the improvisation that occurred before it, and also marked improvisation that would come after it, you see. And so we didn't play none of the full pieces. Our idea was to construct an entirely new piece out of these elements that come out of these other pieces.
Interesting.
And therefore we give our listening and viewing presence something that's unique for them and could never be seen by anybody else that was not there.
It's an experience.
So the shaping of this stuff, that is the musical properties, come in a very peculiar way that meant to induce improvisation or creativity, even in the parts that are actually notated, because my notation allows it to be interpreted in different ways. Like, for example, if you only have two components, like in the notated part with long or short sounds, already you have the possibility of generating different ideas about that. And then you have this other component, improvisation, which also is open for a debate, instrumentally or compositionally or improvisatorially, on the spot. So the stuff ends up being pretty well shaped in the presence right there, even though it's score-bound or score-guided.
Often when we talk about the language of a lot of the historical struggles you talked about and you reference in your work, we think about language as the obvious, speeches,
right,
transcriptions of political meetings. You're visiting this whole reality of language, the language of musicality, and how it has represented these struggles through the ages,
right,
through generations, in fact.
Right.
Could you talk a bit about that in relation to the way that you approach the musicality in a live show, too?
Well, when you think about the idea of freedom, all of those early figures straight on through to now, and if we look just at musicians, like Duke Ellington wrote a very important piece in the early 30s, I believe it is, and called Black, Brown, and Beige. Mm-hmm. And that piece had a very profound meaning that most people don't apply to it. Black, Brown, and Beige was about, it looked like it addressed issues of color, but it doesn't. It addresses issues of culture. It addresses the world as being a mixture of people of color, you see. And that whole philosophy is expressed when you come, let's say, decades later with Malcolm X, not Malcolm X, but Max Roach, when he talks about freedom now.
Yeah.
He talks about freedom now. Mm. And then you move just a tiny bit further, and you got people like Ernie Coleman and Albert Allen, Don Allen, Don Cherry. Mm-hmm. I mean, these people explored the whole possibility of culture being able to transform these issues into reality, you see. And the only thing that stopped it from being a reality is that all of those units that were fighting for social justice, they went back for earlier musics, which could not possibly liberate them as the music that they were looking at. You see, so that means that the music of freedom, which was called freedom music, free music, the civil rights and all issues of rights, was it women's rights or whatever, they all obscured that music and went backwards and got stuff that was emotionally in memory connected with them, as opposed to being something that was intellectually and spiritually connected with them, which would have been that music of freedom, you see.
Yeah,
so one could argue, and I would believe be very successful, that had the civil rights movement endorsed the music of their times, there's the Ernie Coleman, the Cecil Taylors, et cetera, that a lot of the issues we face today, or at least some of them, I put it that way, would have been resolved.
Interesting.
You see?
There's this historical reference, but also it sounds that there's the argument towards the creative process as the motion towards imagining a future,
exactly,
futurism.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the whole idea of liberty really in truly sense means trying to shape a society in which you would love to live in, though you may not never live in it.
Sure.
You see? Because liberty and freedom are words that can never be completed. You see?
Sure.
They are like landmarks in which we go after, and once we achieve some of them through whatever systems that are available, like the court systems and et cetera, that line becomes invisible and moves forward again, you see. And that's the guarantee that struggle should be endorsed as a continuous process as opposed to struggle to victory.
Sure.
Because the victory is an illusion, you see. You never gain victory, but you keep moving forward, because that moving forward actually liberate little bits of territory in the social spectrum that's going to enhance everybody at some stage. See, so yeah, it's all connected in the sense that we strive for it. We know that it's actually something that we can strive for and that is real. But it never gets there. It's like when you're looking at the sky. The sky looks blue. But if you keep going up there, you never find that blue. You see?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know that there's an illusion about it being there, and we refer to it as being the sky. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Leo Smith, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
My pleasure, too.
That was a conversation with musician, composer, academic Wadada Leo Smith. I just wanted to play this from the archives. I hadn't featured this interview here on Free City Radio podcast. Thanks to Wadada for speaking to me, and also to music curator Peter Burton for helping arrange this interview. This has been another edition of Free City Radio, the 106th. It is the 20th of April. We bring a new episode every week, so stay tuned for our episode next week, and I'll go out with a piece of music featuring Wadada Leo Smith on trumpet. I'll talk to you soon, and take care.